The Thomistic Institute's Rome Study Abroad program for undergraduates is unlike any other. Immerse yourself in a rich intellectual tradition and learn from top-tier Dominican professors and other Catholic intellectuals. Encounter the Eternal City and experience profound spiritual formation as you take excursions walking in the footsteps of Dominican saints through places like Siena, Florence, and more. The application deadline for the spring 2027 semester is August 1st. To learn more and apply, visit ThomisticInstitute.org/Rome.
Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
You will rejoice to hear that no disaster has accompanied the commencement of an enterprise which you have regarded with such evil forebodings. This is how Mary Shelley begins her famous Gothic novel, Frankenstein. I begin in the same place for three reasons, the first of which is obvious, given the theme of our symposium today. Frankenstein is a story we know all too well. Victor, a university student of the hard natural sciences, discovers a way to construct an intelligent life form, a being he refrains from naming, but which he variously calls creature, monster, fiend, wretch, and even demon. Yet Victor produces his monstrosity not simply out of his own artifice. Rather, he coordinates the natural powers he discovers through his chemical and electrical studies. And he does so by arranging organic, not inorganic matter. For quite morbidly, he used the stolen remains of the recently deceased. Now, this is actually a scientifically reasonable shape for the story to take. For more than 200 years later, we still have not been able to produce life out of non-living matter, let alone intelligent life. For we can do nothing except wield what nature provides. This is a point to which I'll return, but now for my second reason. I begin with this story also because of the alternate title that Shelley provides for the novel, calling it Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. With her use of Prometheus, we are taken back to the ancient Greek myths, where we find Prometheus, a child of the Titans, bound and condemned to torture for offending the gods. His crime? He tricked Zeus by stealing fire from the gods in order to introduce science and technology to the human community. Accordingly, since the time of ancient Greece, the figure of Prometheus has symbolized man striving for scientific knowledge and technological innovation, a striving which is neatly encapsulated in the singular human desire for predictive power. This desire is the dynamo of modern science, inasmuch as it explicitly strives to mathematically pattern the natural world in order to predict its actions, and thus develop technology that takes power over its happenings. Interestingly, the object of this desire is already contained in the name Prometheus, which means forethinker, Prometheus. Again, this is a point to which I'll return, but for now, my third reason. I begin with these opening lines because it nicely formulates my own judgment about the supposed threat of our modern Prometheus, the technology most unfortunately named artificial intelligence. Though there are certainly many reasons to be apprehensive about this technology and how it is going to shape human life and culture into the future, I do not think the disasters portended by so many will actually come to pass. Again, more on this later. But for now, let us begin by getting some clarity over the nature of the technology as it currently stands. Yet before I do, I wish to note some tension in my use of language. Though I will make every attempt to avoid anthropomorphizing language, I will at times use terms in ways that appear to impute human agency to AI, mainly because these are the terms that are currently in use by those developing it, and this for many reasons, some prosaic, some confused, and some problematic. However, at all times it should be remembered that what we are actually talking about here is a tool and a machine. Though I assert this now, that it is a tool, Exactly why I affirm this, the principal assertion of my presentation, should become clear by the end of my input. Now, with these qualifiers in place, let us look at the technology. As it currently stands, AI rests on the success of so-called artificial neural networks. These are software programs whose operations are modeled on the behavior of the neurons of the animal brain. Now, while this technology has been around for many decades in more rudimentary forms, recent success in the software itself and in its undergirding hardware has led to an exponential shift in the technology and what it can accomplish. This shift relates to the way these networks can process input so that they compressively learn to pick out salient patterns in any pertinent set of data. The network learns by being trained on an immense pool of data, most of which is provided by the internet, and its learning involves weighting the nodes of its neuron-like architecture in a way that reflects patterns found in data. Based on this training, the corresponding model can then receive prompts and provide probable responses on the basis of its pattern recognition. Now, in practice, what this means is that when we prompt an AI model with some statement, question, image, etc., it responds by predicting the most likely output series for such a prompt. And it does so in a piecemeal manner, by giving us the next most likely item in the series, given the previous items in the series, and given its encoding from the training data. And it does so word by word, pixel by pixel, or frame by frame, depending on what the model is tailored to process. And so simply stated, AI predicts one thing at a time, and it does so in an entirely probabilistic way, on the basis of the connections it has formed that is discerned mathematically in a particular data set. Now, on the basis of this brief description, we can already take a step back and assess exactly how to categorize the technology as it currently stands. And so we ask, what is it? In answer, we can say that it is a mechanism that gives predictions to prompts based on probable connections. Therefore, we must be immediately cognizant of its inherent limitations. The first of which is that the technology is not at all capable of or interested in truth. For probabilistic computation, however refined, will only ever give probable results. And this is precisely why contemporary AIs hallucinate false connections between things while simultaneously asserting certainty. The second limitation is found in their heavy reliance upon human creativity in their training data, which is ordinarily the vast reservoir of human creativity we call the internet. And this is precisely why the creativity of these models can go only as far as human creativity, the creativity upon which they feed. Finally, we should note the intense involvement of human agents in their training, for they need humans to provide the rules and parameters by which they operate, and they need humans to provide positive and negative feedback while they are being trained in order that their weightings can be adjusted to respond to the particular data set. Now, having described the technology as it currently stands, and having noted some of its limitations, those with respect to truth, creativity, and human control, we are already in a position to see how AIs are not intelligent like us. First, we see that they are not knowing or understanding. They are not aware or self-aware, conscious or self-conscious, and nor are they reasoning or performing judgments. They are merely manipulating numerical connections in order to draw probable conclusions. Second, we see that they are not trading in meaning at all, for they are not meaningfully responding to meaningful inputs, they are not following through on meaning, moving from meaning to meaning, but again are simply manipulating numbers that stand in the place for meaning and the interconnectivity of meaning. Now, this can all be summarized by saying that AI is a machine that computes. And since to compute is to calculate, AI is a machine that calculates. It is a complex calculator and nothing more. It performs its function by reducing all input to numbers before manipulating these same numbers in order to predict what likely comes next. Therefore, even if the mathematics, software, and hardware by which it operates are incredibly complex and sophisticated, so-called AI computing systems are just that, computers performing calculations. Indeed, they are glorified calculators, and this should not be forgotten. Now, this is precisely why Bernardo Kastrup, the Dutch philosopher and computing engineer, says the following, which I'll here quote at length. Everything a computer does can, in principle, be done with pipes, pressure valves, and water. The pipes play the role of electrical conduits or traces. The pressure valves play the role of switches or transistors, and the water plays the role of electricity. Ohm's law, the fundamental rule determining the behavior of electric circuits, maps one-to-one to water pressure and flow relations. Indeed, the reason why we build computers with silicon and electricity instead of PVC pipes and water is that the former are much, much smaller and cheaper to make. That's the sole reason we compute with electricity instead of water. Electricity is not a magical or unique substrate for computation, but merely a convenient one. A wooden tool called an abacus also computes. Now, with this in mind, Kastrup immediately continues. Ask yourself, do we have good reason to believe that a system made of pipes, valves, and water correlates with private conscious inner life? Is there something it is like to be the pipes, valves, and water? If you answer yes to this question, then logic forces you to start wondering if your house's sanitation system, with its pipes, valves, and water, is conscious, and whether it is murder to turn off the mains valve when you go on vacation. So much for the current technology. But you might reasonably respond, perhaps we are only at the early stages of an engineering process that will exponentially quicken as AIs are included in their own production and programming, in their own training and testing, all of which is actually already beginning to happen. But you might then be tempted to continue. Perhaps in the future, something higher will emerge on this basis, something with awareness and self-awareness, able to know and to understand, able to judge and to choose, and able to determine its own actions out of itself as an agent in the world. Now, my first response to this would be to take the position of Kastrup, and I would shift the burden of proof. If you think such is possible, don't merely assert it. Show me why I should also think this, for I currently have no reason to think so. And indeed, I have every reason to think that such operations cannot emerge from arrangements and functioning of material parts, however complex they become. But that would only be a first response, and a negative one at that. I would then respond with a positive proposition as to why intelligence in principle is impossible to produce by any artifice, even having received the fire of science and technology from Prometheus. But to make this case, we would need to know what awareness and consciousness are, as well as what knowing and understanding are. So, having achieved a basic understanding of the technology as it currently stands, let us now turn to the nature of intelligence. What is human intelligence? Is it binary, there or not there? Is it a continuum, more or less? Is it multidimensional, doing many different kinds of things? I propose that it is all three, so that when intelligence is actually present, it performs many different kinds of actions, and each of these more or less powerfully depending on the individual. We could then list its many actions as knowing, understanding, and evaluating, measuring, determining, and calculating, remembering, predicting, and anticipating, judging, opining, and believing, and we could go on. Moreover, I take it that when the intellect is seeking knowledge, it does so in several different ways. It does so deductively, by reaching conclusions according to the laws of logic. It does so inductively, by drawing inferences from the accumulation of experiences. And it does so abductively, by making judgments according to a kind of best guess intuition. Now, if all of this is the case, we see that genuine intelligence is an incredibly capable and agile power, and that current AI technology pales in comparison to its capability and agility. And this is the case even while the current technology far surpasses human intelligence in certain restricted operations, such as those of quantification and calculation, or its vast access to memory resource. Yet, having said all this, and notwithstanding the vast array of actions that the intellect can perform, we must go right to the heart of intelligence in order to see everything more clearly. For this will cast light on all our intelligent actions, while also revealing that intelligence can be shared or participated in by some entities, whether natural or artificial, that are not actually intelligent, such as the higher animals. Now, to go to the heart of the matter, I'm largely going to marshal the thought of Thomas Aquinas, unsurprisingly, and Edith Stein, while also considering Plato and Aristotle in the background. With these thinkers in hand, we will then be able to gain insight into the central activity of intelligence, the activity that specifies our nature as human. First, let us look at the meaning of the word itself. The English term intellect comes from the Latin phrase intus legere, which literally means to read within. Accordingly, the history of language teaches us that intelligence is a capacity to read from within the meaning of things. This is first accomplished when the intellect reads from each thing its formality, and thus comes to know what things are. And it does so largely on the basis of seeing how things act, for the action of a thing reveals its being. Then, with this basic grasp in place, the intellect can examine each thing for its other causes, their material, efficient, and final causes, and thereby come to know why each thing is in an appropriately full way. Now, the most important of these causes, and the cause of the causality of the others, is the final cause. For it is in light of the final cause that the intellect can come to know each thing with appropriate fullness. And indeed, the intellect cannot rest until it has answered this question, why? What, how, why? These questions are the dynamo of intelligence. And intelligence answers these questions by reading reality for its meaning. Now, the way the intellect reads meaning is by apprehending, as we've seen, the forms of the realities it considers. Such apprehension involves a kind of intellectual seeing, technically called intuition, not to be mistaken with the gut sense that we sometimes have. Now, for Aquinas and Aristotle, this act of intellectual seeing involves abstracting the intelligible from the sensible. The act of abstraction renders the meaning of each thing for the intellect and is the grounding basis of all further intellectual activity. Therefore, this act of intellectual intuition, accomplished via abstraction, is the very core of intellectual activity. It is its heart, and it is the nexus through which everything else related to intelligence passes. In this nexus is found the specifying difference of human nature as a species. Then the intellect proceeds upon this basis. Having inwardly received the meaning of any given reality, the intellect can then become productive of a concept by which the reality is understood. To be productive in this way, the intellect must discern the essential features of the object, and it must combine these features into an articulated whole that we call its definition. When the intellect produces an accurate and comprehensive definition, it has then perfected its initial intuition with a renewed intuition that is now mediated by a clear and precise concept. This is a kind of depth seeing, and this is why we call it understanding. In understanding, the intellect reaches out and grasps reality. Then, on the basis of its concepts, the intellect can set about reasoning about the things it has understood, composing and dividing its concepts into propositions. And these propositions can be set alongside one another in arguments. And further degrees of understanding can be attained through these arguments. And it is in precisely this way that the intelligence journeys towards truth, here understood as the adequation of intellect and things. For this is the proper object of intelligence, to understand being in truth. Now, having set forth a basic anthropology of intellect, let us focus on the decisive feature that distinguishes human intelligence from so-called artificial intelligence, and indeed from every other form of participation in reason. The intellect sees meaning. The intellect grasps and understands meaning. The intellect is motivated by meaning and moves forward according to meaning, reasoning from meaning to meaning, and it does so all meaningfully. Upon this basis, we recognize the primary correlation in reality. It is a correlation between persons possessing intelligence and things possessing meaning. The terms capturing this correlation are subject and object, where persons are understanding subjects and things are the objects understood. The characteristic subjectivity of the person is revealed then most clearly in awareness and self-awareness, the awareness and self-awareness that accompanies understanding. The upshot of awareness and self-awareness, together with intellectual activity, is captured by the singular word consciousness. As intelligent, the personal subject is conscious and is thus aware of its knowledge, aware of its understanding, aware of its reasoning, and aware of everything in human life that is anchored in intelligence. Therefore, in every intelligent being, there is a subjective pole of understanding, a subject that knows and understands, while also being aware that it knows and what it knows, that it understands and what it understands. Standing opposite this subjective pole is its objects. These are the things that possess meaning, both in themselves and in their interrelation with one another. And this latter is inclusive of all human creativity, whether that be in the form of the literature, music, and fine art of human culture, or whether that be in the form of the contents of the natural sciences and their technological fruit. But no AI stands in reality like this. There is no conscious subject in AI, since there is no pole of understanding that is both aware and self-aware. This means that there is no intuitive apprehension of meaning and no corresponding motivation to move toward meaning. And there is no moving from meaning to meaning in a meaningful way. There is then no genuine correlation of subject and object. There is only the manipulation of numerical symbols that stand in the place of meaning. Now, this is precisely why you need a human interpreter at all sides of the operation of AI. You need human engineers to create their meaningful programs and human engineers to set their meaningful rules and parameters. Again, you need innumerable human individuals to create the meaningful data set upon which they are trained. And you need numerous humans to train the AIs with meaningful feedback. In this way, the AI can appropriately respond to the meaningful patterns of reality. Now, given this bracketing on all sides by humanity, without this embrace by those who actually understood, one could rightly ask what on earth AI is doing, for it would then seem to me to be as meaningless as a pile of money on a desert island. No human actors surrounding AI, no purpose for AI. Now, after this focusing upon intellect and what it does, let us look at everything again, but briefly and with some degree of simplicity. Intellect understands meaning. Intellect and meaning are tightly correlated as subject and object. Indeed, intellect and meaning are inconceivable without one another. But AI is not an intelligent subject of understanding. There is no subjective center that stands opposite meaning with understanding. Moreover, AI does not trade in meaning at all. AI has nothing to do with meaning. All it operates on are mathematical symbols that stand in the place of meaning. So, simply stated, with AI, there is no understanding and there is nothing understood. No understanding and nothing understood. Now, though you might be convinced at this stage that the technology is not and won't be intelligent, you might still wonder why genuine intelligence rules out the possibility of being produced artificially, as I claim it does. So let us look again at the problem, and in the end, it is my hope that you, like me, will see that the phrase artificial intelligence is oxymoronic in the strongest possible sense, even more so than the phrase square circle. Let us begin at the most distant reason to think so, before proceeding to the strongest argument. First, all the intelligence of which we know is the intelligence of a natural substance. But precisely as artificial, AI is not a substance. Indeed, in principle, it can never be a substance, for it is no substantial form and thus no formal unity. Therefore, it is not one thing, but a composite of parts operating together in a mechanistic manner. Thus, in Thomistic terms, AI is not even an entity in the proper sense, but an accidental arrangement of natural entities. It is, in brief, an accident. Now, as it currently stands, which will likely be the way it continues to develop into the future, the situation is worse. Since AI currently is a software program operating on some hardware, and since both are artificial and mechanistic, AI is essentially an accident of an accident, and thus most definitely not an entity in the proper and full sense. Therefore, we have no reason to impute intelligence to it, now or indeed into the future, for there is no evidence that a natural power like this can be possessed by anything but a natural substance. Or at least, the burden of proof is on those who posit this as a possibility. Second, all the intelligence of which we know is the intelligence of a living substance. But again, precisely as artificial, AI is not a living thing. First, because as we've already seen, it is not even a substance. And then because life always manifests a holistic unity that no artificial mechanism can exhibit. In every mechanism, the parts precede the whole, while functioning with relative independence from one another. Whereas in a living thing, the whole precedes its parts, and all parts are organs that function together for the sake of the whole. Therefore, though AI may someday be composed of organic matter or living substances, like Frankenstein's most unfortunate creature, this does not at all imply that it itself would be living. For we would then have to furnish a non-material unity to ensure that the whole would precede its parts. Now we can talk about this further in the question time if you like. And just so, for two reasons, we see a major problem for AI. The functional unity of everything artificial is determined by our use of it. Artificial mechanisms have no unity determined by their function except for us. They are determined by our design and our use. They have no unity in themselves, is externally imposed by us, and entirely derivative of their purpose for us. We can no more make a substantial or living unity out of something artificial than we can create out of ourselves. For our creativity extends no further than this, that we understand nature and wield its natural powers, no more. And with this last point, we see why we only find the power of intelligence in natural living substances. For intelligence is a power of the natural world, and we can no more artificially engineer a living power than we can artificially produce a natural force. Again, perhaps we can revisit this during the question time. But for now, let us turn to my final argument against the possibility of artificial intelligence. And this is our strongest argument, for I will mount this argument on the basis of the nature of intelligence as such, and more precisely, its inherently immaterial nature, Let me first state my case simply. It is not the human brain that thinks, reasons, knows, and understands. The brain is not conscious. It is neither aware nor self-aware. The activity intelligence cannot be derived from matter, and nor can intelligent activity emerge from matter. Intelligence is not the action of a material organ. But how can we know this, I hear you ask? Is this not just a bald assertion? Or can we see that it is the case, and can we know it with certainty? I say we can see with clarity, and we can know with certainty. We can know it because of the earlier detailed central activity of intelligence. Awareness comes self-awareness, united to intuitive understanding. This is simply not possible for a material thing, however refined the arrangement of its parts. Let us consider each in turn. Awareness comes self-awareness, and then the capacity of understanding. First, awareness comes self-awareness is that capacity by which the world comes to appearance for someone, with awareness facilitating the appearance of the world and self-awareness an appearance for someone. The consequent simultaneity of presence in our being oriented outward and inward at one and the same time, with the objectivity of awareness united to the subjectivity of self-awareness, this clarifies for each one of us the fundamental nature of our subjectivity. Since such self-reflexive and inwardly reflexive relation is simply not possible for matter, this most primitive feature of human life reveals the spiritual nature of the human being with lucid clarity. And it does so at each and every moment of our waking lives. Then, as we have seen, understanding is that capacity by which we read the meaning of things, by first seeing their meaning in an act of intellectual intuition, before clarifying this meaning for ourselves by producing a concept by which the meaningful thing is grasped. Now, when we grasp the meaning of things in this way, though we are understanding material things, that by which we understand is itself not a material thing. Let's take a concrete example to illustrate the point. When we think triangle, we should ask ourselves, what is the nature of this thought? Although when we think triangle, we must also perceive, imagine, or remember a triangle, the content of our thought is not the same as the content of our perception, imagination, or memory. Whereas the contents of these latter capacities bear material features, the content of thought is quite different. The content of thought is stripped of all material properties of the objects it considers. The content of thought is then experienced as something immaterial, even if it is still relative to the material thing thought about. Now, we could put all this a little crudely, though in a way that gets the point across, by saying the following. What size is thought? How much does thought weigh? What color and texture does thought bear? Does thought smell good or bad? We notice immediately that all these questions are nonsense. Though the things thought about have all these features, thought itself has none of them. Thought is then something properly immaterial. But what we negatively denominate as immaterial, we positively denominate as spiritual. So that precisely as immaterial, intelligence reveals itself to each one of us to be something spiritual. And just so, we discover three things of utmost importance. One, reality has two primary regions of being, those corresponding to spirit and matter. Two, awareness comes self-awareness, united to intuitive understanding, is an activity simply impossible for matter. And three, to be a spirit is to be a person, and to be a person is to be a spirit. And this primarily means to be in possession of intelligence, and with intelligence, freedom. Therefore, no matter how matter is arranged, no matter how complex and sophisticated it is engineered, just like contemporary AI, or indeed any putative AI into the future, it will never be a base upon which intelligence will emerge. For spirit is not derivative of matter. Or again, at least, the burden of proof is with those who posit this possibility, for I have no evidence to believe that it is or will be so, and every reason to think otherwise. Therefore, again, the phrase artificial intelligence is an oxymoron of the highest order. Now, with this in place, let us return to our categorization of AI. What is AI? Well, let's first state in the negative. AI is certainly not intelligent. Even though it simulates certain restricted acts of intelligence and provides output that can then be interpreted by human users with understanding, AI doesn't perform these acts intelligently. All it is doing is performing complex mathematical operations on a vast array of numbers. Of course, given the speed and expanse of this processing, such a mathematical computation can furnish incredible predictive power for the human user, such that AI can be understood as an incredibly useful tool. It is then truly a modern Prometheus, a fire of the gods, that gives humanity a superhuman capacity to calculate, and thus to predict, and thus to develop, and thus to progress, well, at least potentially. But as I noted at the outset, and this is of first importance, we must remember that what we are dealing with here is a tool, a mechanistic tool of the highest order, yes, but still a tool. As I stated earlier, AI is a glorified calculator, and thus a glorified abacus, and nothing more. It is not intelligent, it is not affectionate, it is not free, simply it is not a person, and it can never be a person. But if we don't keep this in mind, we have the strange propensity to interact with it in a personal way, and this will be to our detriment. Though they are programmed to respond in characteristically personal ways, this should not fool us into thinking we are dealing with a person. Therefore, before concluding, we must ask one final question. Even though AI is a very powerful tool, is it enabling us to be more human and to live a more fully human life? Now, this is the same as asking, is AI leading to genuine human development and to true human progress? For only if it does so is the technology actually making the world a better place. But since genuine human development is found only in the development of virtue, and since true human progress only in the progression of culture, without these elements standing firmly at the center, AI is actually going to lead to human devolution and cultural regression, and ultimately to our alienation from one another and even from ourselves, for these are actually the same in the end. So, is AI good or bad? Is it orienting us toward development and progression, or rather, devolution and regression? As a first approximation toward answering this question, we could note that as a tool, its use depends on its users, and therefore upon whether humanity will use it in ways that are good or bad. But however true this principle is, if we leave it here, we consider the question of its goodness and badness all too simplistically. For tools also undoubtedly coordinate and condition the activity of their users. Though tools certainly make us more able, for this is their entire purpose, that increase of ability comes at a cost, because it is always routed down determinate paths, and therefore it no longer possesses the agility of the human intellect and will, exercised in conjunction with the agility of the human body. And just so, our tools shape our activity, and through our activity, tools shape what is becoming of us. Therefore, simply stated, tools are not neutral. Tools empower their users, yes, but they also mold their users to themselves. And we should then be aware of how this tool is molding us to itself. Now, I can think of no tool that could potentially disrupt the nature of human activity more than AI. but I have space here only to intimate one aspect of that disruption, an aspect that involves the direct degradation of the human user and humanity more broadly. Interestingly, this problem is not related to the sexual sphere, such as might be found in our enhanced ability to produce pornography or in our corresponding introduction of robotic sex dolls, however degrading these technologies might be, and they are certainly that degrading. Rather, my concern is related to what AI is going to do to human thought, and with thought to human freedom, and with thought and freedom to human creativity. If we farm out our thought to AI, and the more we farm out our thought, we will undermine our ability to think. And though we will never actually lose the ability to think, we will certainly weaken this ability in its exercise. We will weaken its possibility to exercise thought powerfully. Now, if we abdicate our responsibility to think powerfully in this way, this will inevitably impact our ability to attain truth. And with the loss of truth, our ability to act freely. And with the loss of truth and freedom, our ability to be creative. And this is the first and most infallible sign of the being of a person. It is the way we manifest our likeness to our Creator most clearly. Thus, in a word, should we use AI as our thinking machine, we will progressively become more stupid and animalistic. But this is to be avoided at all costs. Interestingly, with the development of AI, we are hoping to become superhuman. There's a kind of transhumanism that's coming along with it. But its impact might be the exact opposite, and we actually become more subhuman. Now, here at the end of my input, I want to return to the beginning. In developing our modern Prometheus, the technology called AI, I do not think this enterprise, which is regarded with such evil forebodings, will actually culminate in disaster. I do not think we are beckoning our eradication by our supersession by Skynet or some other rogue AI. For I do not think we can actually produce a living, intelligent being that stands in reality as a genuine center of life, powerful and active out of itself. There is no I compute, therefore I am. However, given the speed with which AI can currently process data, and given the future possibilities of its further advances, the presence and use of this technology will certainly bring many changes to human life, human society and politics, human creativity and human culture. And all of these changes will certainly not be good, given that we as a community of agents are not wholly good ourselves. Therefore, we have to be careful with what we're using here, careful precisely in terms of its power. Because, as we know, with great power comes great responsibility. Now, before I finish, though, I would like to return to a hopeful note. Not because I don't want to finish on something sour, but rather because I think this positive note is actually the case. With the presence of AI, we have an opportunity to both recognize and exercise what is distinctively human, our free creative thoughtfulness. And with this, to lean into an educational modality that leads to genuine human development and progress. This can all be captured in a phrase co-opted by AI, and that is deep learning. To survive the AI revolution that's coming, as well as to chart a course through its changes, the changes it's inevitably going to bring, we need to return to the practice of deep learning, the kind of learning that culminates in wisdom. And with wisdom, the exercise of this virtue in the contemplation of truth. For in this is found our salvation, not in some parody of transhumanism. Now, at the end of my input, I wish to leave you with a final thought, namely that everything truly human begins with thought. And I wish to do so with the help of a quotation from a Dr. Seuss book, "Oh, that thinks you can think," where he says the following: "Think, think and wonder, wonder and think. How much water can 55 elephants drink?" Now, having come across this quotation online, I dropped it into an AI to find the reference, and it gave me the following response. Based on an average daily intake, 55 elephants could drink approximately 1,003,750 gallons of water in a year. Evidently, something as simple as a childish rhyme can break the algorithmic facade of artificial intelligence. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.